This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The U.S. organic market has more than doubled in size over the last decade. Wisconsin continues to be a leader in the organic industry. The state is home to almost 1,300 organic farmers, second only to California. With more growth for the organic market on the horizon, farmers, researchers, and other stakeholders are coming together in La Crosse to talk about what they hope the future of the industry will look like. It's happening at the annual Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service Conference. Joining us to talk about how the MOSES Conference is tackling these issues are several of its board members. David Abbas, a farmer from Finland, Minnesota, and works with the University of Minnesota Extension. Molly Rockman, founding director of Earth Dance Organic Farm School in Ferguson, Missouri. And Darren Von Ruden, a dairy farmer from Vernon County and president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. So, Darren, we'll start with you. I mean, could you talk about some of the biggest issues that are facing organic producers right now?
You know, as a dairy farmer on the dairy side, we're certainly seeing a larger and larger number of animals on farms. And we're looking at the states like Colorado and Texas that have what they call CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. And, you know, the idea of organics when it first came around was to have the animals be more in contact with the land. And some of the issues that dairy farmers are really facing right now is these operations are probably not following the rule of the law that was prescribed many years ago. And it's really flooding the dairy market. You know, they produce a lot more milk on those farms than we do on the what you think of as the 50-cow or 100-cow dairy operation that we see here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, David, from your perspective, what are some of the biggest issues that you think are facing organic producers?
There are a lot of issues. There's market pressure from overseas for grains and other things. There's a lot of issues with cheaper organics being through the big box stores. So there's a lot of different market pressures for organic, not to mention the ability and to grow organically with all the different challenges with climate change and otherwise. So there are a lot of factors from the farmer's perspective and also from the market and consumer perspective. So there's a lot of issues to unravel.
And Molly, what do you see as some of the biggest issues facing organic producers that are still kind of on the horizon yet? Do you think that they're going to be, you know, what issues do you think are going to be influencing the industry as it moves forward?
Well, one thing that I think the consumer is faced with that, of course, relates back to farmers is that there's often a confusion of when you shop at local farmers markets that everything's necessarily organic. And yet at the same time, I think we need to be moving in the direction of more regional food systems so that it's not just organic farming that, you know, maybe it's organically grown, but there are tomatoes grown in Mexico or it's garlic grown in China. I think the more we can actually address not just organic production methods, but also localized food distribution, I think that's one of the most important issues on the horizon going forward and now. As David mentioned with climate change, you know, the closer we can all be eating to the food supply, to where that originates, the healthier we'll be and the less impact we'll be putting on the planet.
Obviously, we're going to be talking a lot about issues that are really specifically facing the organic industry. But, you know, Darren, I wonder if you could talk about how you see organics fitting into the kind of the broader agriculture industry. You know, why are these issues that are facing organics important to agriculture overall?
Well, it certainly is a growing industry. Back when we first started, we were just that pinhead on the pile. And now, you know, we're looking at 5% of all the food in the country is organic. And I've even heard upwards of maybe 10%. It just depends on where you're getting your information from. And so, you know, we're not that ingredient that is really hard to find anymore. It's becoming more and more of a staple in people's diets. And I think, you know, the issue that we'll continue to strive for is how enforcement happens to make sure the consumer is getting what they think they're getting. You know, it's the USDA organic seal is something that's really treasured by the farmers, but also the consumers. They trust that that means that it's an organic product. And so how do we connect with the consumers to make sure that viability stays there?
One issue that we've seen as the organic industry has continued to grow is that, you know, we're seeing more producers pop up in states that currently didn't have or previously didn't have a lot of organics. I know Missouri is one of those states where we've seen a lot of organic producers come into this space. And, you know, I wonder what, Molly, you feel like organic producers need to be successful and to kind of come into this industry.
Well, the number one thing we need is for customers to understand why organic is important. We need customers to be willing to pay the price as directly to the farmer as possible. We've seen this real huge increase across all sales, all retail, where people are buying online more so than directly, whether it's at a store or directly at a farmer's market. And while some farmers are able to take advantage of online sales, by and large, most of us are selling direct to customers or to food co-ops or to grocery stores or restaurants. And so we really want customers to still be buying directly from as close to the farmer as possible. So I would say that's the number one thing, is that we need customers to support organic, because you're either going to pay the farmer the fair price for the food, or you're going to end up, we all are going to end up paying much greater prices in healthcare and environmental mitigations down the road.
As we see more organic producers come into the space, Darren, do you think we're going to see Wisconsin continue to be kind of at the top of the leaderboard when it comes to the number of organic farms?
I would say yes to that. You know, we certainly have the topography and then the mindset too. You know, Vernon County, which is my home county, is one of the largest organic producing counties in the nation, and also home of Organic Valley, which is a $1 billion cooperative right now. So they've certainly built the infrastructure here in the state for that. And we're seeing other parts of the state, too, where there's the mindset of the local communities is let's try to be more thoughtful about our production practices. And a lot of times that boils down to the organic side. You know, that's one of the more economical systems that's available to farmers, because, you know, a lot of times the consumer does see the farmer as their friend and wants to make sure that the money goes to them versus some corporation that might be based in Europe or China, you know. So it's certainly the mentality is here for an expansion yet.
We're obviously under a new administration with Governor Evers coming into office this year, and I wonder what you feel like organic farmers in the state need going forward.
Well, I know one of the things that Secretary of Ag Brad Path put in his budget to the governor was a full-time position for organics, and then also a part-time position for grass-fed folks that we certainly need. We probably should have two or three instead of just one, so it's definitely a step in the right direction. And, you know, the governor has a mindset of, you know, agriculture is important to the state, and he understands the links between organics and what that has done for a lot of the rural communities throughout the state. So I think he's going to be a friend in this process. And, you know, if we keep up our end of the deal and have conversations with him, I think it will be a good relationship in the end.
David, who is the average organic producer?
Well, that's hard to say. Each area of the country, you know, develops different types of farms depending on the topography, their history. In our area of northern Minnesota, it's the small, intensive cropped vegetable farmer that's been actually increasing in numbers in our area because, of course, the costs are low, capital costs are low, and if you can sell direct like we do to the customer, you get that full food dollar. So some of the challenges now is the farmer's getting a small and smaller percent of the food dollar, and that's what a co-op can rectify, and that's why new and creative community-based type food systems can really give more of that food share to the farmer. And with 88% of the farmers in the country losing money last year, we need to figure out how to keep farmers off food stamps. So,
Yeah, and Darren, I wonder if you can kind of share who you think the average organic producer is in Wisconsin.
Well, like Dave said, it's hard to pinpoint that because there's so many different ideas out there, and the options are really unlimited today compared to what they were back in the late 80s, early 90s when the organic movement really started in western Wisconsin here. So, you know, it could be that 20-year-old that's fresh out of college that wants to get into growing fruits and vegetables or milking cows, or the 50, 60-year-old that wants to get away from the rough lifestyle of living in town and wants to get their fingers dirty. So, you know, it's a wide variety, and I think the organic community is very welcoming of just about anybody that wants to get into organic agriculture.
Molly, do you feel like the organic industry is more accessible maybe than conventional agriculture?
Absolutely. If I were to answer the question of who is the average organic producer in our part of the country, I'm in Ferguson, which is also in St. Louis, Missouri, and we actually offer an organic farming training program to beginning producers. And what we see as the major trend is more women getting into agriculture. Certainly, many of them for the first time. These aren't women who necessarily grew up on farms. Many of them are very concerned about our food supply and the state of the environment, and the demographic in general, I guess I would say, skews to late 20s through 30s as far as the age range. And we do have a wide diversity of folks doing the apprenticeship program. We have probably about 25% of our applicants are minorities, or, you know, a variety of African American, mixed race, Pacific Islanders, Hispanic, Asian Americans. And, you know, we also know that in this country, the majority of the farm workers, the people doing the work on farms, are not white. So I think that needs to be changed in people's mindsets. When you think of who is growing the food that you eat, you might envision, you know, a 50 or 60-year-old white man, and that's not really true in terms of who's usually doing the majority of the work to bring the food to your table. So I think we do need to be thinking about this from a broader lens than just what one might think of.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about challenges and opportunities facing organic farmers. We're here with several MOSES board members, Molly Rockman from Earth Dance Organic Farm School in Missouri, Minnesota farmer David Abbas, and Vernon County farmer Darren Von Ruden. You know, Darren brought up this issue that we've seen more large-scale organic producers kind of come into this industry. And David, I wonder what your thoughts are on how those players in the organic industry have really influenced kind of, you know, who we can say is the average organic farmer.
Right. We had an intern one time at our farm. He was from a 6,000-acre farm in Red River Valley, and his equipment was as wide as our fields. He trained with us, and what we did is we connected him with large-scale organic farmers, 2,000-acre, 4,000-acre organic farmers, so that it could translate to his operation when he went back at home. So he learned a lot and explored what it's like to do organic farming, and now he's running his dad's farm plus 4,000 extra acres, so a 10,000-acre farm out in Red River Valley, using rotation, cover crops, a lot of the basic principles of organic farming that are essential for soil health, soil integrity, erosion, and he's doing a natural beef. And so I think it's, you know, an issue too, as we look at the future of farm, what it's going to look like. It's going to be more diverse. It's going to be more female, as we're seeing in our area. But we also have to figure out how to transition these farms from what's currently and what's going to be, because a majority of our farmland is going to be changing generations in the next decade. And we're having that on our farm. So we have a young couple moving to our farm to run our community-supported agriculture operation. And so they're moving in. They've been trained. We trained them a couple years ago. They've returned. So that's the face of the transition. And what that's going to look like will depend. And we need a lot of help. We need policy issues. We need some changes with tax law. We need some ability for people to access land. Access to land is really hard if you're not a farmer. Farming is a highly capitalized industry. And so to lose a farm is devastating because you've lost all that capital. But to start one up is really hard to pay back with the margins that we're looking at. So there's a lot of issues. So the face will be changing. It's going to be diverse. And the next generation is coming up. And a lot of them are looking towards new ways of doing things. So we're in a great transformation in agriculture. It'll be fun. I want to live long enough to see where it comes out. So.
Yeah, I feel like that's a great transition into talking about the conversation that's happening at the MOSES conference this year, surrounding around this Organic 2051 Forum. So, Molly, I wonder if you can start by kind of explaining what the purpose of this forum is.
Absolutely. So the Organic 2051 is to envision the future of farming. What is that going to look like in this country in 32 years, you know, kind of past this precipice point of everyone thinking about what is the world going to look like in 2050? Well, what is it going to look like the next year, you know, when we're looking at how we're going to feed the global population? And I would say one of the greatest myths that's put out there by conventional agriculture, you might call it industrial agriculture or big ag, is that GMOs and high-cost technology is needed in order to feed the world. And we see that as absolutely not true. We see that the most effective and democratic way to feed the world is actually to have more small-scale family farmers and independent farmers on the land. You can produce way more yields per acre the more people you have on the land and the more diversity of crops that you have on the land. So, for example, on our 14-acre farm, we're actually intensively growing on about 1.5 acres of that 14 acres, and that's because of the huge yields we can get because of the permanent production practices put into place where we're focusing on soil health instead of maximum yields, you know, immediately. So we're seeing, you know, $100,000 in vegetable product come off of that 1.5 acres. I don't know how many corn and soy or wheat farmers could bring in that, you know, that gross sales off of 1.5 acres.
Yeah, and so this forum involved 100 stakeholders, I believe. I mean, David, who was at the table for this conversation?
There was a lot of people from the Midwest for proximity, but there are people from the East Coast, some people from the South, West, and Plain States. So there was some good ideological representation there. These are the shakers and the movers in the food systems work. And so, you know, we had the opportunity to claim a joint vision to work with. And then we broke groups out into, you know, small group sessions on production, community, sociology, you know, energy, economics, livestock, climate change, seeds, and, you know, the edges of agriculture that wasn't incorporated in that. And, you know, my station was community revitalization. And so as it goes towards what Molly's talking about is what the future of farming looks like will determine the future of rural communities. And, you know, if we're looking at more diversified family farms, that fills the schools, that revitalizes our communities. It creates that network that we once had that we could have again in this new farming system. And those are some of the types of things discussed. So each group really went into depth with these diversity of experts from around the area and kind of dove in and say, well, what do we need to do to get to this vision in 32 years? What does it look like? What are the steps? What are the mechanisms, you know? So in our area, you know, community revitalization is looking at capital. How do people access land? What do we need to do? Local credit union type banks, how do we do that? What does that look like? So each station really kind of dived in and developed some action points. Because we want to work off each other's shoulders in this work and not be in our own silos.
Yeah, I mean, what are specific action steps that you see the organic industry as being able to take?
Well, you know, in our case, we were also looking at, you know, what does it take to build that second tier of businesses, What are the requirements? What kind of population do you need? How do you revitalize? In my town of Finland, we've increased the number of farms. We're looking at food systems and new businesses. We've started new incubator businesses. So we're looking for how do we do that? And some of the old models may not be the best choice as we move forward. A lot of the private ag industries that have been developed, they privatize, and then they're really serving the shareholders. So how do we structure our market systems so that the profit, again, that food dollar, how we can get more of that to the farmer? And so that's through cooperatives, that through other mechanisms. So those are the types of things we explored in depth and then said, well, how do we get there? You know, what do we need to do? 1, 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And each station had different things, you know, whether it's cover cropping. And a lot of these aren't just organic or, you know, these are like agriculture practices that we need to all consider to make our waters healthier and our skies cleaner and our food something we want to eat. So a lot of what we talked about would have been for any agriculture conference, but it had the organic angle.
Molly, what focus area were you involved in yesterday's or in this week's conversation?
So the table that I facilitated focused on reaching disadvantaged and underserved farmers. And we actually changed the name of that table through the course of conversation, realizing that that had a tone of us and them as opposed to we're all in this together. And uncovering the fact that it's not really so much about reaching, because a lot of, you know, it's not necessarily, we don't know disadvantaged and underserved farmers. I'd say at Earth Dance in Ferguson, we're certainly reaching already a lot of underserved folks, people who have limited resources and are considered minorities in this field of work. So what we really needed to change that to is resourcing. You know, David mentioned about the cost of land being sometimes insurmountable to new farmers. And that is absolutely a critical aspect of this, is how do we not only provide access to it, but reduce the risk? A lot of people are not going to be interested in getting into agriculture as a career when the idea of taking on a farm on your own, especially in a, you know, maybe in a rural community is where you can afford the land, but you don't necessarily have a social network built up. I mean, there's these issues are so cross-sector, you know. That was something that really struck me during our conversations yesterday, was we couldn't talk about the economics of farming without addressing the social issues, and we can't talk about the energy use without talking about climate change, and we can't look at any of this also without adding a racial equity lens to it. I mean, our group was really talking a lot about that, about how do we get beyond, you know, the fact that our agriculture, not get beyond, but how do we acknowledge the fact that this country's agricultural system is built on the backs of unpaid slaves, you know, of African American people who came over from Africa unwillingly, and is also built on stolen land, you know. And those are big issues that I think when you think of sustainable agriculture, you think of, oh, this is just agriculture that doesn't have chemicals. Well, yes, but how do we add the lens of social justice and equity to it in a way that really lifts us all up? Because we're all gonna eat better and we're all gonna sleep better if everybody sees that this takes all of us working together and addressing these issues.
You know, David brought up that, you know, there is a wide variety just regionally, but I imagine, you know, people have a wide variety of opinions about the future of the organic industry and what that's going to look like. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Molly, how do you come together as an industry to kind of get everyone around a shared future?
That's a great question. I mean, it was really exciting to see this collective vision that was created actually in advance of yesterday, because thankfully everybody did a bit of pre-homework before the one-day deep dive into the future of farming. And so to see the common threads of what people in the organic farming community envision, you know, we do envision that farmers of all types will use organic farming practices regardless of age, gender, heritage, type of crop or livestock or scale of operation by 2051. I mean, that's something that everybody could agree on. We want the farm economy to be decentralized and self-supporting. We want the external costs and benefits of farming to be incorporated into wages and land values and property taxes so that, you know, the people are understanding the real cost of food and we're not just passing that on to, you know, again, kick the can down the road to be dealing with it when so many people are struggling with diet-related illnesses like obesity and heart disease and diabetes. I mean, these are things we don't need to be dealing with at the level we're dealing with if we actually change the way our agricultural system is set up.
That's Molly Rockman, founding director of Earth Dance Organic Farm School in Ferguson, Missouri, and board member of the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service, here with us today to talk about the future of the organic industry. She's joined by other MOSES board members, Minnesota farmer David Abbas and Vernon County farmer Darren Von Ruden. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. David, I wonder what your thoughts are on how you get such a wide industry as organics is, how you get everyone to kind of come together and, you know, get on board with a shared vision for the future.
Right. Well, one thing that brings us together is organic farming is all about the soil, whether you're a livestock farmer or a vegetable farmer. And we have similar values. Basically, my job as a farmer is to grow the soil. I grow the soil, I make it rich. Our property started with less than 1% organic matter, and we had a goal of 5% organic matter. And that organic matter holds nutrients, holds water. It's the sponge and life of the soil. And over our 32 years of farming, we've gotten it up to 18% organic matter. So we can grow three times as much crop in that small area. But why? Because of the soil. And so that's one of the unifying aspects of all the organic farmers and that food system is trying to develop and build and respect and nurture our soil. And so we have some real strong common threads on that bring us together, that enable us to sit in the same room. And one of the tragedies of our time now is we're not able to talk at the community level. We're not able to have constructive conversations as a whole society. But at least within the organic community, there's enough in common that we can have those conversations despite the diverse and different perspectives. So I think that's something I hope will spread to all of our society, where we can have true and honest and respectful conversations. Because these conversations should be happening all over, but we're siloed and separated.
Yeah, Molly.
And I think we also really feel a sense of urgency around this. That was something I really felt in the room yesterday and heard from people is we can't wait any longer. We can't be talking just to people in our own neck of the woods or just people who automatically think like us. Because, of course, there is a diversity of opinions within the organic community. And I would say everybody is in this together and understands the importance of the issues we're facing.
And I'm interested, David, how your example of a young person coming in and, you know, learning from your organic farm and bringing those practices back to a conventional operation. I wonder how you see, as the organic industry creates this shared future, how you see this rippling out to agriculture in general.
Right. Well, I think some of the challenges right now, frankly, is economics. And, you know, how do you ask your child to return to the farm, conventional or otherwise, if you're not making enough money? And so, you know, the reality is that without that incentive or that enabling to make money with agriculture, you know, we have to figure out how to do it so that we create a just food system that Molly was talking about. So I think a lot of what we're grappling with in the organic is also a conversation in the conventional. And what we need to do is bring those folks together to come up with common threads. Conventional now is doing cover cropping. It didn't for many years. Now it's talked about. Now it's doing because we're wanting to get that organic matter back into the soil. So I think there's a lot to learn from each other. We need to figure out how to, you know, if we could have one voice on at least a certain number of issues to lift the farmers up. The farmers are smart people and working really, really hard to grow food for our communities we live in. And so I think if we could together be proud of our, you know, our what we do and maybe share, get together with that. I've done presentations on sustainable agriculture in conventional farming groups. And I'm just so excited about farmers as a noble and a good way of making a living. It's a good thing that we do. And despite the differences that I might share about sustainability or organic farming, there's usually a camaraderie. And that's the kind of conversation we should be having. And I think that could spill out if we could create some of those forums where we could create safe spaces for that. So I think there's social aspects and there's economic aspects that could move out. You know, a lot of people are switching organic just frankly so they can survive as a farm. There's a lot of imports that could be grown here in our country where there is a margin of profit with organic, but not with conventional. And so I think there's a lot of cross-pollination. And as things change with the environment, as things change socially, I think more and more will become organic just because it's the economic choice and it happens to be the ecological choice. And that's what, if we can grab some of those externality costs that Molly's talking about into the price of food, it would happen naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Molly.
Yeah, I think too often organic and conventional farmers are pitted against each other as if we're enemies, and that's absolutely not true. I completely agree with David that we need to be thinking of all farmers as doing very important work, and I think that really the people we need to be thinking of as not on the same page are the people who are patenting seeds and developing technologies that are only benefiting a multinational corporation, not the farmers themselves, and that are selling inputs that are damaging to our health, damaging to the environment, that are, you know, buying up huge tracts of land and producing very unhealthy food that's unsafe for people to eat. Those and food manufacturers that are wanting to decrease the cost of every ingredient as much as possible for the sake of profit, pure profit. So those are the things that we need to actually be fighting against, not other farmers.
Molly Rockman, founding director of Earth Dance Organic Farm School in Ferguson, Missouri, and board member of the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service, is here with us today to talk about the future of the organic industry. She's joined by other MOSES board members, Minnesota farmer David Abbas and Vernon County farmer Darren Von Ruden. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the challenges and opportunities facing organic farmers in the Cooley region and beyond. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Every year, hundreds of organic and sustainable farmers descend on La Crosse for the annual Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service, or MOSES, conference. And this year's conference has the opportunity for farmers, researchers, and other stakeholders from the industry to come together to talk about the future of organics. Joining us today to talk about the challenges and opportunities facing organic farmers in the Driftless area and beyond are two MOSIS board members, David Abaz, a farmer from Finland, Minnesota, and Molly Rockman, founding director of Earth Dance Organic Farm School in Ferguson, Missouri. So we've been talking about some of the different issues that were discussed in the Organic 2051 forum, but you know, Molly, I wonder what happens now. You know, what are the next steps that need to happen to take these ideas and make them reality?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the important action steps that came out of our group was the criticalness of developing career pathways. For people that are interested in getting into agriculture as a career, they need to be able to see the prospect of making money. They need to be able to see a secure future for them and their families. They need to have the social network to make it all possible. And so one of the key ways this is actually research proven for new farmers to get into agriculture is through apprenticeship programs. And there was a gentleman at our table who runs the dairy grazing apprenticeship, and he was talking about how challenging it is for young people who go through maybe ag school, and they're mostly taught to be, for lack of a better way of saying it, cogs in a machine, right? Going into work as an employee of a vertically integrated farming operation that is, again, that profit is not necessarily staying in the community, it's going out to whomever the shareholders are, as opposed to training people in ag programs to be entrepreneurs, to actually develop their own farms, become an owner, and not just an employee. So one of the key ways to make that possible is to have paid learning opportunities, to earn while you learn. And it's really wonderful that our government has Department of Labor funds and workforce development funds, but often we see that money primarily going to manufacturing industry or places that they pretty much have, you know, full-time staff devoted to applying for that grant money to come in and help pay for these apprenticeship programs. Whereas if we could get just even a bit of a slice of the funds to be directed at this kind of agriculture that's entrepreneurial, that's family-based, that's small-scale and ecological, that's what we need to transform the food system. We need more public investment and private investment, because this movement has been built on the backs of independent farmers and nonprofit organizations who are operating on shoestring budgets for too long. We need big money to get this agricultural system the way it needs to be.
It's interesting that you talk about Department of Labor funds, because I think a lot of people, when they're thinking about this issue of getting the next generation of farmers into agriculture, a lot of them go to the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture program, Beginning Farmers and Ranchers,
exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it sounds like you're talking about that we need more than just USDA programs to focus on this issue.
Absolutely. I mean, it crosses all sectors, you know, like labor obviously is a big issue in agriculture. And it is, you know, when we think about workforce development, you don't often think about developing farmers. But if we're wanting to eat healthy diets and grow food in this country, that's a big part of our workforce we need to be thinking about.
David, what other next steps do you think are needed to take these ideas generated at the MOSIS conference and make them reality?
Right. Well, the neat thing is people came from all over, and some are farmers, some are community organizers, some are food nonprofits. And so I made a whole lot of networking and people that will be close and be able to tap into for resources as we look at building our food system in Northeast Minnesota. And that's a lot what this was about, was networking, but also sharing a vision together. Because it's not enough to say we don't want this. We have to look at what do we want and what do we envision? Where are we going? And that really can help with that intention and move us in that direction more precisely, more directly. And so some of the things that Molly was talking about, the social, the economic, what's happening now at the conference is exactly that. You've got thousands of organic farmers or wannabe young farmers who are networking with old geezers like me and other folks that are have been in the farming and learning and how to do the soils. So there's this whole network going on with the conference. And then there's actual learning. There's a mentorship program. We need to go out and mentor. The best way to learn about farming is from a farmer. So that's the idea. And so we have interns at our farm. At every farm we have training. We have education classes so that they get the whole picture. So they get the economics. My wife does a farm finance class. And, you know, because we need to train folks up so they look at all the different aspects of the operation. But we also need to start looking at how to bring in other places like labor, like climate change groups, like other groups, like animal rights groups. Because organic is about how do we do this well? And, you know, and how do we do it where they're grass-fed, where there's more space for the animal? Those are the types of things. And so I think there's a lot of allies. And there's a lot of potential as we move forward. And what this group, both the conference and this visioning session, it brought people together, get us excited, retool us, make connections, and then go back out and slug away with the work that we're doing in trying to revitalize rural communities and farms around the country.
Yeah, Molly.
I think the key message is that we have a lot of people ready to do the work. That's one of the really exciting aspects of the organic farming movement. It's not an issue of, well, that sounds like a nice idea, but nobody really wants to do that. So many people are eager to get back out on the land and to get farming and to make this their vocation, their career. And in order to do that, I mean, I'm thinking of one woman I met yesterday at the Organic 2051. Her name is Mon Page. She's the first certified organic Hmong farmer in Minnesota, maybe in the country. And she's been farming for 10 years as an incredible farmer and leader in her community in this. She's helping a lot of other Hmong farmers find land. And she still is having trouble getting ownership of land. You know, the farm that she's been on, she's at risk of losing because of the government shutdown recently. You know, it's the last priority for the local FSA office that's reopening to actually work on new farmer loans. And so if somebody could just give this woman a loan, you know, that at a fair interest rate and or invest by buying the farm, I mean, those are the kinds of investments we need because there are people ready to do this.
So, you know, organics is part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. You know, we have the National Organic Program that manages, you know, certification and the USDA Organic Seal. And so, Molly, how do you see some of these ideas, or do you see some of these ideas being translated to, you know, the leaders in the National Organic Program?
Well, one specific action that we would have for the USDA leaders, in particular of the Organic Research and Education Initiative, which I should mention, we are very grateful to them for actually funding this forum. They were the reason we were able to bring so many wonderful people together yesterday, so many bright people in this field. And we would request that, for example, they can make something a priority for their next round of funding. Well, we think making a priority to resourcing disadvantaged and underserved farmers would be a great specific thing to ask of the USDA.
Yeah, David, how are some of these issues at the national organic level, how are they influenced by politics and in some ways maybe separate from politics? Because I know some of the issues that are facing organic farmers have been around through, you know, are currently facing the farmers under the Trump administration, but were also present under the Obama administration.
Right. And I think it goes to priorities. Part of this forum was to develop research questions. USDA was very interested. What are the research questions we should be addressing? So how much research is going towards which sector of our farming? So if we're going to come up with some of these solutions, some of these challenges with crop production and different ways of producing food organically or not, it's all about priorities. And so I think that's where this intersects. And I don't think there's anything that's not political. I think what you choose to eat in the morning is political. So it's highly a political organization. And it takes a lot of work, a lot of nonprofits, and a lot of people to make sure that label stays true and that it has that integrity. So the consumer can buy it and say, I'm confident in this. So it's a very important political discussion, but nothing's free of politics, especially when you get to the national level.
That's David Abbas, a farmer from Finland, Minnesota, and board member for the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service. He's here with us today to talk about the future of the organic industry, and he's joined by another MOSES board member, Molly Rockman from Earth Dance Organic Farm School in Missouri. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Molly, I think a big question at the end of all this talk about the future of the industry is, why should consumers be invested in this conversation?
The shortest answer is that because we all eat. So if you are fortunate enough to have food on your plate today, you might want to care about the way in which that food is grown. We watched a really interesting video last night at the Organic Farming Conference put out by the Friends of the Earth. They carried out a pretty intensive study with families all around the country transitioning to a 100% organic diet for simply 1 week. The level of pesticide residue found in their urine samples dramatically declined to the point I was shocked. As somebody who's a huge proponent of eating organically, I could not believe how much of a difference it made in 1 week. And if you were just to imagine how much that would roll out if people continue to eat organically, we could really be making a dent in some of the newer health crises that we're seeing. I say newer because autism, Parkinson's disease, some of these were not the major health crises, 50 years ago that they are today. And I think a lot of that has to do with the pesticides on the food we eat. So if you care about your own health, that's the selfish reason to care about these issues, although important. I don't mean to say we shouldn't be. And if you care about the environment, if you're noticing that we're having more natural disasters happen around the world more frequently and with greater intensity, and that's costing not only our government, it's costing us, our community members themselves, you know, not only the trauma of going through that, but also the real loss of, you know, your own home or your own resources. And that we can really change, actually, what's happening with regards to climate change if we can sequester more carbon in the soil, and that can be done through organic agriculture.
David, what are your thoughts on why consumers should care, especially people who maybe aren't purchasing organic right now?
Well, all rural consumers should care because it's their communities that have vacated. One of the things that I'd touch or add on to Molly is that, you know, agriculture is one of the most critical reasons for climate change, for carbon. So I think caring for how we eat will have so many ripple effects, not only environmentally, but socially, as was mentioned. So I think that study that we just saw is quite compelling, the fact that the levels of pesticide decreased so greatly in 1 week. That's pretty motivational. But we have to figure out how do we do this and how the consumers can help us figure out a way that the farmers can get fed and so can the people that can't afford it. And so I think, everyone, I've never met someone who, as you talk about issues about poverty or other things, they don't care. So I think we need to make that linkages between how we eat, how we grow our food, connects to our social justice issues. And I think the more we can create those stories, the narrative, I think the greater we all will be because of the benefits as we look at new ways of growing food.
And Molly, for people who maybe are buying organic, you know, are there takeaways that consumers can have to make sure they're being a smart purchaser and making sure that they're supporting the kind of agriculture that they're trying to support by looking for the organic seal?
Thank you. Yes, I would say the most directly you can purchase from the farmer themselves, the better for rural communities, as Dave pointed out, and for health, because that produce probably traveled didn't have to travel nearly as far. And it also is likely fresher, and so it'll taste better the more directly you can buy it from the farmer. So please do shop at your local farmers markets. They have them year-round now. It's not just a May through October thing. And become a member of a CSA farm, community-supported agriculture, where you can get a share of veggies every week, or other products as well. There's CSAs for every kind of food now. So just buy directly from the farmer as much as possible.
Molly Rockman from Earth Dance Organic Farm School in Ferguson, Missouri, and Minnesota farmer David Abbas are board members for the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service. They're here with us today to talk about the future of the organic industry in light of MOSIS's annual conference in La Crosse. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.